You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com. Hey everybody, welcome to KoopaCast number 48. That's 48 awesome KoopaCasts. 49 if you count that awesome KoopaCast we had last week talking about the Super Smash Brothers Direct that we recently saw. This week I am your host, Matt Paxton. I am the multimedia manager at PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. Joining me are three other awesome people who will also introduce themselves and what they do here, along with this question. I actually just came up with it, and it has to do with the Smash Direct last week. So my question to you all, Fox only, no items, Final Destination?
Well, my name is Justin Sharp. I'm the editor-in-chief of the magazine and founder of the website. And let's see... So are you asking, would I want to be Fox with no items on Final Destination?
Yep.
Possibly. I wasn't the biggest fan of Fox, though, so I probably wouldn't play as him.
All right.
All right, I'm J Money. I'm the assistant editor of both the magazine and the website. And... I don't know, my favorite character in Super Smash Brothers was Pikachu, so I don't know, I didn't really play much with Fox, so I don't know if I can commit to saying that I'd want to be Fox in Final Destination.
Hey, I'm Trev, and I'm a writer for Pure Nintendo and PNM Magazine, and I say why not? You know, everybody's kind of clamoring for more Star Fox, you know, action. So, you know, I'll take him in any form I can get him. That means in a stripped down form in Smash Brothers.
Most people don't know this. I actually just, you know, I just talked to Iwata and I talked to Miyamoto, and they told me that Fox Only, No Items, Final Destination is actually the new sequel to the Star Fox franchise. You know, glory story in there.
That's a big exclusive.
But into some real news and not stuff that I just made up. We're going to talk about, there are a few subjects we're going to talk about. We're going to go ahead and start out with Watch Dogs for the Wii U. Ubisoft Montreal finally got not a concrete release date, but we have a window now, finally, fall 2014. And, I mean, I'm just going to start out and say, you know, it's not a concrete date. The fact that we have a release window out now, it makes me breathe a little bit easier for the future of this game on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was that fear that, you know, is it going to kind of slip even in 2015 and get canceled? I'm with you. Yeah, it's, you know, it's good to hear.
Yeah. Definitely. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, J-Money.
So, yeah, it's definitely nice to have some release information, especially after having the more concrete information we have for the other platforms and saying that they're kind of pushing off the Wii U for now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's just kind of like a tentative date and that it could be pushed even further, you know, hoping that it doesn't, because if it goes too much after the release of the other versions – it's less likely to sell as many copies on the Wii U as it would on other versions. So it's nice to hear that we might be able to get it in our hands finally winter this year.
Yeah, I remember when they first announced it was coming to the Wii U last year. I was really excited because the previous E3, that was one of the biggest games that was announced, was Watch Dogs, and people were wondering and seeing if Nintendo might snag it, for the Wii U. And when they finally announced it was coming to the Wii U, I was really excited. I'm glad it at least has a more definitive release window than just 2014 or later in 2014. So. And I'm excited to see what they're doing with the Wii U gamepad specifically, because they've been promising that they're doing a lot of unique things with it. So hopefully it is still feature complete as far as the storyline goes and everything from the other versions, and then it just has more content above and beyond that with the gamepad.
Yeah, they really need to. I mean, especially after Rayman, that delay, hurt a lot of people, but at least, it was worth it in the sense that the Wii U had options that you couldn't get through other consoles, and they really tried to make it up to Wii U owners. I know some of that was just for PR purposes, but yeah, no, it was a good thing, and I think I really think it's needed. In order to justify the wait.
Well, and they did an incredible job on Rayman Legends for the Wii U. Like, that's a fantastic game. So I'm hoping that they take their experiences developing Rayman Legends for the Wii U and not necessarily translate some of the same things from that game, but use that experience to their advantage when creating the Wii U version of Watch Dogs.
Yeah, and arguably, Rayman Legends uses the gamepad better than most any other game on the Wii U. Most games use it for off TV play, which is great, but as far as taking advantage of the touch screen and the asynchronous gameplay, it's up there at the top.
And that was, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, off TV play has kind of become like a standard feature. And that goes with like inventory screens, map screens, and all that other stuff that would normally be displayed on the TV. And I like to see developers more and more try and do something more unique than rather than just, oh, we have off TV play and you can use it for your inventory or an off-screen map or whatever.
Yeah, those seem pretty, I would think those would be pretty easy to implement, some of these people are like, oh, it takes so much more time to develop for the Wii U. It's like, really, you just put the map on there and some of the HUD elements. If that takes a long time, then maybe you need to revise your engine, but
Well, we even saw similar, like when the DS first launched, that first year or so, there was a lot of like GBA ports that had mild, touchscreen enhancements. That wasn't really anything groundbreaking. I think kind of off TV play sort of like that in a sense. It's cool, but there's definitely a lot of room for growth. And I think Ubisoft, I think it's a must, not just for like sales purposes, but even like for public relations, because by delaying Watch Dogs, they're really, and I'm not trying to knock them because they just gave us a great cover too. I do like Ubisoft, but they're going against their own stated reasons, like for the Rayman delay, where we want to have them all released at the same time. And now, they've gone back on that with Watch Dogs, so I think they're really, gonna wow us and say, it's worth it.
And there's definitely extra pressure on, I think, on Ubisoft, simply because when the Wii U was coming out, Ubisoft was one of the developers who really kind of, or publishers and developers who's, stood up and said, we're gonna stand by this console and we're gonna develop things specifically for the Wii U and, really make it stand out. And I mean, you can argue, yes, they've done it with Rayman Legends. Of course, there was a delay here and there, but I feel like that same pressure is still on Ubisoft with Watch Dogs for the Wii U, that not only do they have it out for the Wii U to kind of keep their support, but that they also kind of for lack of a better term, lead the way in terms of how they implemented the gamepad into the gameplay for Watch Dogs.
Do you think if, you know, say when Wii U Watch Dogs comes out, the gamepad is just so, the way it's used is so cutting edge, it's so innovative, do you think people who picked it up on, you know, another console, you know, might double dip, assuming it was just the perfect representation of how to use the Wii U gamepad?
I think you find more and more people double dipping on various versions of one game. For instance, I went on Twitter one day and asked who was going to double dip for Smash Brothers, because they're having, it's not a simultaneous release. And there are a lot of folks who said that they would pick up the 3DS version to hold them over till the Wii U. And then when the Wii U version came out, winter 2014, they would purchase that version as well. Now, it's kind of different with a version of the game being released on different consoles, like altogether. But I could possibly see someone, if they own like a PS3 or PS4 and Xbox 360 and a Wii U, that they might go with an Xbox or PlayStation copy and then say, okay, well, I'm going to pick up the Wii U copy. I kind of want to see what they did different.
Yeah, and I kind of hope that since Ubisoft is kind of going back on, you know, their whole thing about releasing the versions at the same time across consoles, I'm hoping that they'll probably have some post-launch DLC or something for Watch Dogs. That seems to be their standard with their games, even with the Assassin's Creed games. So I could see maybe some DLC coming out in the fall, and hopefully the Wii U version will get that DLC maybe at launch, and you know, we could see some people, oh, I was going to buy the DLC anyway. It's, you know, $10 to get the DLC for my version, but it's $60, you know, or $50 or $60 to buy the Wii U version, and it comes bundled with it. Well, you know, I may double dip at that point. I think you may get some people double dipping, but I think if you incentivize them a little bit more, you know, some extra content or something else bundled in, it lessens the sting of paying $60 twice in a row, you know, in 5 months' time. I don't know. I double dip very, very little, but you know, it just has to be the right. I almost said it has to be the right timing, you know. If it's like 2 years after release, and you know, it's a really good remake, like Deus Ex, Human Revolution, the director's cut. I think that's an awesome reason to double dip. 2 years later, I don't mind paying $40 for, you know, a lot of the content they added. So.
All right, and moving forward, another Mario Kart 8 trailer came out. All right, and we also learned that there will be at least 30 different characters to choose from in this new iteration of Mario Kart. And I'm pretty sure that's the biggest roster that they've ever had, that Nintendo's had in, I want to say, any game? Or pretty close to any game. I don't know how, like, the Mario Golf franchise might stack up to it. Mm-hmm. But, or maybe, you know, maybe Double Dash had more. But are you guys finding that there might be like too many at this point, or do you feel like they should just keep, you know, shoveling in more characters?
I think the more the better. I mean, I think the more characters you get in there, especially with an online game, it's nice to, you know, differentiate yourself a little bit, and you know, more playable characters is great. You know, people are like, oh, I want to be Wiggler, I want to be, you know, Diddy Kong or whatever. They kind of identify with that character, you know, or that's their favorite unique character. I remember people like Dry Bones a lot, I think, on the DS version. Or I think, which one had Dry Bowser? Didn't they have a Dry Bowser?
That was the Wii U version. I believe they had Dry Bowser.
Okay. So I think more characters is better. And as far as, like, the roster goes, I think Mario Sluggers, or they've had a couple Mario Baseball games, and I think those rosters were pretty big. I would have to look it up, but I think the Mario Sluggers ones had like 30 or more characters.
I guess that would make sense that you have to fill, you know, entire baseball teams at that point.
Yep, because you had to have what, 9 people per team, so.
Well, and I like the fact that they introduced new characters. I'd probably like to see less reoccurring characters. Like, the addition of the Koopalings was cool, but in my opinion, that was more or less like just an easy way to expand the roster. I think rather than the Koopalings, I would have liked to see maybe some other Nintendo characters that we haven't seen in a Mario Kart game before. And I'd even like to see characters outside of the Mario universe. Like, if they were to introduce, like, a Link or Samus or something like that in the Mario Kart, I think it would just make the I mean, I know it's called Mario Kart. It's a Mario Kart spinoff. But I think it'd be cool to see other Nintendo characters make, like, a cameo appearance.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's worked with Smash Brothers, even bringing in, you know, third-party characters. There was, I think, of games with big rosters, there was a great, it was kind of a late Wii release, Fortune Street, that brought in characters from the Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest games. So, I definitely would like to see them expanded, even, you know, even if they had to call it Nintendo Kart. At this point, paid entry, people know what it is, and you can still feature Mario, but like Jay Money said, have Link there, have Samus, you know, bring in, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog or, you know, some of these. But I guess with the bigger roster, kind of almost necessitates having more racers. Like, was it the Wii? It was the first one to have a dozen racers as opposed to 8, I think. I that wasn't a change I was crazy on. I kind of think it made it a little chaotic. I thought it put a little more focus on kind of weaponry than racing. I thought I lost that balance. So if more characters, you know, is going to, you know, ultimately just lead to having more people on the track, I don't know if I'm in favor of it. But, you know, certainly for this game, I think it's good.
Yeah.
I can see why they would put, I mean, just kind of go off topic real quick. I can see why Nintendo would put 12 characters on track for the Wii version, simply because you can fit more people into a room when you go online. And, you know, people aren't just sitting there waiting for matches, or they can just kind of go right in. And it's just kind of a bigger party online.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my 2 cents on that.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it definitely makes sense. I guess I've been playing a lot of Mario Kart lately to, you know, because we're doing the retrospective for the next issue. And I don't know. I guess maybe I'm an old curmudgeon in some ways. I kind of long for the earlier ones where it just seemed like there was a little more balance, you know, with the weapons and the racing. I thought the Wii version, and I do like it. I just thought it was a little, you know, a little chaotic. But
With the mention of online, I really hope that they fix, like, the whole cheating issues, because for me that kind of like really put a downer on the online experience for the Wii. Is it was really hard to win a race.
Well, I think that'll be mitigated by the fact that they can push updates a little easier. On the Wii, there wasn't, it had barely any, you know, online infrastructure, let alone a way to push software updates. But they've shown a good precedent with updating their games on the Wii U and the 3DS. You know, when they had that Pokemon glitch in the town that could potentially freeze your game and, you know, lock your save file, they patched that pretty quick. So, and then also in Mario Kart 7,
the shortcut.
Yeah, they patched that big shortcut on was it Woohoo Island? It was one of the Woohoo Islands.
That was a big thing when right after they did that, the people who weren't aware of it, you know, still trying to do the realizing it didn't work.
Yeah. James just texted. He's probably watching, but he said Mario Sluggers has 42 playable characters. So they had 12 captains you could choose from, and then 30 teammates or whatever. But I was looking on there. It looks like some of them are you know, like Fire Bros, Hammer Bros, but then there's like different, they have some of the characters from Mario Sunshine, you know, the guys with the hula skirts, the Piantas or whatever.
Oh, right.
And they have like two colored versions of each for whatever team they're on. But they had quite a bit. They had the Shy Guys, Magic Koopas, Dry Bones, PD Piranha, Paragoomba, Monty Mole, Toadettes. They had Baby Mario and Luigi. They even had Dixie Kong.
Wow.
So they had quite a bit. Toadsworth, Goomba. I could see more characters being just, I don't know, a lot more fun. It'd be cool if they even decided to allow you to customize the characters. Like you could unlock, you know, I don't know, just like a hat, kind of like the Miiverse
Right.
stuff they had on the 3DS. Could kind of differentiate it. That way you're not just another Mario, you're Mario wearing a Luigi hat or I don't know, something.
Maybe like some color swaps or something.
Yeah, like they did in some of the Smash Brothers games where you could just change the color of Bowser or, you know, whatever character you're playing as, just in case someone else was playing as Link or Bowser. But
Yeah, that could make for some fun updates. I mean, I would love to race around with Mario and have Flood strapped to my back.
yeah.
I would get a kick out of that, you know, or
Yeah.
you know, that could make for a nice a nice little fun update. I don't know if they would charge for it or not, but
Yeah. One thing I was going to comment on the you know, the addition of like Link and Samus. I think it would be awesome. I don't see it happening necessarily under like the, you know, the Mario Kart name, but I could see it happening as, you know, potentially downloadable content. Nintendo has been very kind of all over the place with how they've been doing DLC and eShop games. Because like Dr. Luigi, that came out of nowhere. So some of the stuff where they tie into existing franchises has been kind of, you know, like they're doing things that people didn't think they would do, you know, which is kind of their mantra. But I could see them maybe doing like some DLC packs for, you know, I don't know, a Zelda, some Zelda tracks, and you can play as Link and Zelda, you know, something. But I could see it almost being like a new Super Luigi U add-on that it would, you know, be an addition. It wouldn't necessarily be required to enjoy the game, but it would, you know, people would get a kick out of it. And maybe similar to the Sonic Lost World DLC with the Zelda tie-in. So.
I just kind of, oh,
Go ahead.
I said I just kind of want now that I think about it, I just kind of really want to see them try to like shove Ganondorf into like one of those tiny carts and just see
Yeah.
how that works out.
Awesome.
That's
His long legs couldn't do it. Like pretty much every character has pretty short legs. Like even Bowser has pretty tiny legs. But yeah, Ganondorf would be a tough one.
have to be old school Ganondorf where he was really like the pig. You know,
There you
back
go.
from Metroid.
Yeah.
Well, as far as Nintendo and their DLC, they've kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of going to use Justin's word, they're kind of like all over the place with it. There's some games where you think that DLC packs would work great, or that they, you know, it'd be cool if they did have a DLC, but they don't. And then there's other games where you wouldn't expect DLC, but then they come out and they say, "Oh, we've got this great downloadable content," and it's like,
Yeah, like it comes out of left field.
okay.
I totally called.
Go ahead.
I said I totally called NES Remix too, by the way.
Yeah, see, NES Remix, there's another example of Nintendo using eShop in an interesting way. Like, right, you know, who thought of that they would even do like an NES Remix thing? It's great that they did, but it's just interesting.
Yeah, with the DLC, I mean, too, we gotta remind ourselves that it's still pretty new for Nintendo. I mean, you know, we've you know accustomed to it probably from you know other you know avenues of playing games or whatnot. But you know, for Nintendo, it's you know they're kind of still learning the ropes. So you know, I'm sure they're gonna over the course of time see what you know what works good, see what you know as gamers we respond to, and see what kind of you know, isn't as successful.
Wasn't it New Super Mario Brothers 2 where they really started putting out DLC more regularly.
That and Professor Layton, I believe, were
Right.
like their two front runners for the DLC, at least on the 3DS.
Yeah. But the Layton was those were free.
Yeah, they're all free. Layton usually does like free puzzles for a year.
So Mario might have been the first to charge increments for each pack. Or were they like $2 each or
Yeah,
2.50?
that was a New Super Mario Brothers 2, right? On the 3DS.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some were more expensive than others. They were like $4, $3. One was a dollar maybe. One was free, I think, for the first month or something, but
Speaking of games that I will 100% believe that they will support with future DLC, let's talk about some Tamagotchi Life, shall we?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I guess they could do some DLC for it.
I mean, those two, that and Animal Crossing, I feel like are like the two biggest, like, if Nintendo wanted to abuse the DLC system, those are the games they would want.
That's true. It is kind of cool that Nintendo hasn't abused it with Animal Crossing, because I could see a ton of people like just forking over cash, as much as they can. Oh, there's a new purse. There's a new item, something like that. I'm not trying to make fun of anyone who likes all the items, but
Spend real money at Nook Store.
It's true though. I mean, we take for granted, like once a month you go to the post office and you get a free gift, sent from Nintendo. I mean, they could, nickel and dime us, and a lot of people would pay for it.
A terrible future in which you really have to take out a mortgage for one of Tom Nook's houses.
That's right. That would
Yeah.
be crazy.
Oh, I tell you that the director for this game, boy, bizarre. I mean, I expected it to be bizarre, but I didn't quite expect,
The level of
this.
bizarre.
Well,
Man.
and the whole presentation came out of nowhere. Like nobody knew it was coming.
They definitely snuck that in there. But we all caught it and we just stared for a good long while at it.
I have nightmares of Reggie's head coming out of the water.
Man.
A giant head.
I saw Iwata taking a bath and I'm like, ooh.
It's definitely, I mean, people would watch it and they're just like, that's typical Nintendo. They're just, whatever. But it's just hilarious.
And Trunnion really took the spotlight this time instead of like Fizumi or Iwata or Miyamoto. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah,
I thought he did. Oh, go ahead.
well, he kind of had the spotlight in one of the directs last year where he was outside for the majority of it. Remember that one? I'm trying to
Was
remember
that
which.
where he was eating like the apples from Animal Crossing?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. He was in the courtyard or something.
Yeah, he was featured quite a bit in that direct.
What I liked about this one is, at least when I've seen Bill, a lot of times he's kind of the straight guy. He's translating for, Miyamoto, or he's, very, in a professional capacity. I thought this was a great chance to see kind of a humorous. I thought he did a great job. I thought, yeah, he was very. He seemed like he was into it, which is, I think, important when you're giving a presentation, because not so much with Nintendo, but sometimes suits from like Sony or Microsoft, you can tell they're business people and they're not gamers. Their presentations are a little dry. I thought Bill, hit a home run with what he did.
He's pretty funny on Twitter too. I don't know if you guys follow him on there.
I do. I definitely do.
It's Trin Tran or something like that.
But another interesting thing, I mean, besides the entire thing in general, when I was, perusing the different gaming websites, after I spent my daily quota on Pure Nintendo, of course, but when I was perusing the other gaming websites, it seemed like the Direct really got a lot of people interested in picking up Tamagotchi Life, or even picking up a 3DS to pick up Tamagotchi Life. And that's not what I was expecting. I was expecting a lot of people to be just completely turned off and just weirded out. Not to say that they weren't there, but I was, you know, a lot of people seemed very engaged with the Nintendo Direct and was like really interested in the game all of a sudden. So definitely a successful campaign, an odd campaign, but a very successful one.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, Matt, and it kind of speaks to the strength that Nintendo Directs do have for certain types of games. Like, I think for Tamagotchi Life, I think it's a perfect example of how the Nintendo Direct can really get a game out there that, you know, people may not know much about. You know, now most people are going to watch a Smash Brothers Direct or a Mario Kart Direct, but those are kind of games that don't necessarily need that much help, you know. Most people that go into the store and they see Mario Kart 8 or they see Smash Brothers, they're probably going to end up buying it even if they have never seen a trailer for the game. So I think that you know, the Tamagotchi Direct kind of speaks to the types of instances that really work with Direct. Now, I do think that a traditional press conference works the best for, you know, the setting like E3. You know, for those types of games where they just want to promote it and get it out there, I think a Direct is a perfect venue for it.
I didn't even know what Tamagotchi Life was before the Direct. I had never heard of it, didn't really follow anything about it. So when I saw the video, I was like, okay, this is kind of interesting. It's not something that I'd necessarily buy, but their video presentation was interesting enough where I watched the whole thing through because it was just so unique in the way they presented it.
So we got to send Jay Money the review code to see if he can be won over, because I'm sure they're trying to really, you know, get a broad market. And I think it's there. I mean, obviously, the Animal Crossing is the immediate similarity, but what was the new Disney game that Alex reviewed? Kind of that
Magical Kingdom or something like that, right?
Yeah, but kind of that
world, I think.
Yeah, that style of game where you can kind of just, you're left to your own devices to go in and live out. You know, people seem to be it's too early, I guess, to say with the Disney game, but, you know, there's an audience for that on Nintendo systems. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if, you know, based on the reception it's gotten in Japan, you know, if it can, you know, do comparable here, I think it's going to be a good boost for the 3DS.
Well, I got really hooked on Animal Crossing. I'm not someone who really enjoys life simulation games too much, but Animal Crossing games really hooked me in. So if I did get some hands-on time with the game, it might be something where it becomes interesting enough where I might consider picking up a copy. But if I were to see it on the shelf, even after knowing about it, I would kind of have to, you know, hem and haw about it for a little bit before actually making a decision as to whether to pick it up or not.
Mm-hmm. I might actually pick up Tamagotchi Life. It seemed pretty interesting. I've heard about it. It was a Japanese Nintendo Direct, like 6 months back, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And it was just as weird as the one that we saw. And I looked at that trailer and I thought, there's no way that they're going to bring this to the U.S. This game is too weird. People will not like it. But lo and behold, it came out, and I was like, wow, this looks really interesting. Other people are interested. I'm totally down. I don't know if I would call it a life simulator, though. I mean, the stuff I saw there was not really applies to life.
It's a fantasy life simulator.
Depends what kind of life you're leading, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, it's not going to be apparently it's not going to be a dating life because Iwata's just going to come out of the sea and steal whatever girlfriend you find on there.
Oh, that's so weird. I really like the Mii aspect. If I did pick it up, I could totally see myself like getting like all the pure Nintendo Mii's in my game. Now we all kind of interact, you know, with one another. I think opening it up to the Mii's is really, I think there's a lot of potential there. You know, especially if you can, I'm trying to blank, you know, like use me as you pick up through like Street Pass or things like
right.
that.
There's a lot for the Street Pass games.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for kind of a constant change in the world.
They're really using that Pokemon theme, gotta catch them all, like taking it to the next level.
I think it's interesting, Matt, you mentioned this, like what games Nintendo has decided to localize. Because like you said, I wouldn't have pegged Tamagotchi Life to be localized in the States. And it's kind of funny because I remember, like, what was it, all those campaigns like Operation Rainfall for Xenoblade and The Last Story and all that, and Pandora's Tower. It's like those seem fairly normal in comparison, you know. So it's like if we had to campaign to get those games, yet Tamagotchi Life is, you know, something Nintendo's like, yeah, here you go. it just speaks to that, like shake your head, DLC localizing games. You're like, oh, what's Nintendo doing now?
I think this. Sorry, go ahead.
And this game was originally a Japan-only game, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, at least in my point of view, Japanese games always typically kind of have that obscure, kind of weird vibe to them, like Tamagotchi Life, and that they, when Western gamers kind of have a glimpse at some of the games that get released there, they're just kind of like, what?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But, you know, for not being in that culture, I mean, who's to say? I mean, what's, you know, maybe they take it for granted. I don't know. I guess it's hard to take for granted, you know, when Bill and Reggie and Iwata are all fighting over Samus, you know, there. But yeah. I don't know. What I really like about this is even people who might not pick it up, like Matt was saying, on different sites and whatnot, it's stimulating a lot of chatter. And I think that's what, you know, Nintendo really needs, especially, you know, in drier spells, you know, get people talking enthusiastically, you know, it can only be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I wonder if their decision to bring Tamagotchi Life here to the U.S. was perhaps influenced by Nintendo's campaign to really thrust the Miis into the forefront and really make the 3DS like this, you know, this social console, really, this social handheld. Because, I mean, Tamagotchi Life adds on to the whole the series of Mii games that they came out with last year. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Mii games that came out before that. So, I mean, this really seems like, you know, Nintendo's, like, I feel like really the Miis kind of have found their home in the 3DS and the 2DS, and the Tamagotchi Life just kind of really reinforces that.
Yeah,
that's a good point. What was it, a while back when they had the, I forget the term they used, but it was like the Mii Weekend, where you could go and instead of getting like one street pass hit, you'd get like half a dozen or whatever. I can't remember exactly how it worked, but it was a way to boost, you know, boost your tags, boost your Mii count. Mm-hmm. Which I guess that's the way kind of it is in Japan, since there's so much, you know, like public transport and whatnot, that, you know, they have it set up where you can really get more hits. I think they're doing something similar here. I probably sound ill-informed here talking, but yeah, I mean, it's a treat, you know, it's a treat for me to go out and come back and get a few tags, and I don't live in an especially populated area, but yeah, it's always fun. And, you know, I think any game or games that can, you know, bring that into the spotlight or to the fore, you know, is a treat.
Mm-hmm.
I silence the room.
Well, we're all thinking about what we're going to decorate our houses when we finally get Tamagotchi Life.
Yeah.
I'm also interested to see what happens, because, like, way back, Justin, you mentioned how they should handle stuff like that for certain games, like the way they directed. And, I mean, part of me kind of agrees with you, but the other part of me really hopes that they just completely just go zany with their E3 conference. If we come in and everybody's dressed as me, all the staffs are Miis,
yeah,
with the giant foam heads.
That would be pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah, all those Miis with the giant foam heads should come out and do the presentation.
Yeah. They always do some sort of zany thing, or I always love it when Miyamoto shows up with a sword or a shield or something, you know. I think it's
Yeah.
always fun. I think they need something like that for showing off Zelda.
Yeah, they're due for a knockout. I mean, if you like looking at like the history of the E3s, whenever they've had one that's been a little underwhelming, they've always followed it up big. I remember back the 10 plus years ago, there was an E3 where they were really focused on the Game Boy Advance connectivity, and it didn't fly over big. And then I think the following one is where they showed Twilight Princess. So, I think, since last year's was a bit, with no real press conferences, a bit disappointing. I think they got to have a huge one
So this
lined
year
up.
we're in for a good one.
We gotta be.
I remember I really liked the one where they first debuted the Wii. Or I guess it was the one. Not really debuted the Wii. We had already seen the controller and everything at that point, but it was the E3 right before the Wii came out. It was the one where Miyamoto went on stage and he was dressed in a conductor's outfit and he conducts the trailers, and they showed off Excite Truck for the first time. They had a bunch of other cool announcements in that show, but it was at the Nokia Theater. I think it was the first year they did it there, but
That wasn't the one where they did the Wii music, what was it?
no, that was a notorious one. That was actually my first E3. I was there when they were doing the Wii music, and they had that guy, the drummer up there, you know, doing
DJ
the
Robbie drums?
yeah. I think that's what he does in the thing.
Is that when you guys had front row?
No, we had front row the next year.
Okay.
Something like that, or the year after that.
How was it being there live when Wii Music got done? Was it kind of, what was the reception there?
Well, I
Not to get
probably
off topic, but
had a different perspective since that was my first E3, and just being there at Nintendo's press conference, I was like, I was having a blast, even though it was pretty zany. But like looking back on it, it's like, yeah, they didn't announce a whole lot. You know, I think they announced, didn't they announce Chinatown Wars for DS that E3? Remember that was a surprising one. Maybe it was the year after. Anyways, I'm trying to remember the big announcements, but like Wii Music, and they Shaun White came out, and he snowboarded with what's her name, Cammy, who they, they finally got rid of her, I guess. But yeah, it was an interesting E3.
We really should like set aside a KubaCast just to talk about like Nintendo's announcement history.
Yeah, we could recap and go down memory lane with some of those. I think the next year was not where we were front row, J Money. The next year they went to the Nokia Club Nokia, which was a really, really tiny venue. That's when they had the vitality sensor. Oh, James is texting me. He says Motion Plus. They had Motion Plus at the E3 that I was at.
Oh, Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Wii Sports Resort. That was the big new thing at that Wii Music one. So I thought Wii Sports Resort was great. It was a lot of fun to play, I remember. That was a great game,
Definitely.
but yeah, I guess the internet remembers the bad parts. So. It definitely wasn't as bad as Konami's 2010 press conference, or what?
Sony's PS3 press conference last
Yeah.
year.
Oh my goodness, that was terrible. It's based on Japanese history, and here's this giant crab, and I'm gonna flip it over to do massive damage. I love it. I love it. I mean,
Least
yeah.
impressive at all, $599.
599 US dollars. 599 US dollars. I just remember watching the
Yeah,
YouTube
that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
video. I wasn't at that press conference, but I think I've heard that people like audibly gasped when when they announced 509 Alley, people went, you know. That can't be a good thing to hear when you're up there on stage after you say that and you hear this, like, the collective air go out of the room, like, I'm moving on. That's next slide, next slide.
That's when you're going to be good at improving.
Yes, yeah. You can't be like, what was it, James, or not James Cameron, but
Michael Bay.
Yeah, Michael Bay, where he gets up and like, good. Poor guy, didn't have his teleprompter.
I guess with that, we're going to go ahead and we're going to cap off with what games we've been playing. We haven't done that in quite a while, but we're running a little bit shorter than usual, so we have plenty of time to talk about it. So let's go left to right. Hopefully your left is the same as my left. So I guess you can start out.
I just got Advance Wars for the Virtual Console on Wii U, and I played Pure Chess on the 3DS and the Wii U, and I've been trying to get through Mutant Muds as well, the Mutant Muds Deluxe on the Wii U.
Nice. Who's that? Is it me? I'm sorry, I can't tell who's in what order. I've been playing... Well, for the past few weeks, not so much this past week or two, but for the past few weeks, I've been going through some of the Mario Karts, in preparation for the next Meg. Great times. Reminds me why I love the series. But more recently, I've been playing through Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, which I just posted a review of it today, actually.
Yeah.
And great game. I was actually surprised because I did play it on the Game Boy Advance, and a lot of times you have nostalgia for a game, and then when you revisit it after a long time, it's not quite as good as you remember. In this case, I think it's actually better than I remembered it, believe it or not. That's been my main game. I got a couple budget eShop games that I'm going to have reviews up in the next few days. Nothing to write home about, unfortunately. But at least I get the Game Boy Advance game, so I've got, I guess, something good to review. Because I hate having to post negative reviews. I really do. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Before I answer, we actually had a very important question from our other boss, James Higginbotham.
Ooh, yeah.
He's wondering why I don't have a tie on. But little does he know, I am indeed wearing a tie.
Whoa.
A quite fancy one.
That's sick. We should all dress up for a Koopa cast. Yeah, I would love that.
Good. I like the P-Wing lapel pin, too. So nice.
Of course.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
So there you go, James. I am wearing a tie. I do speak with bravado. That's how I'm so dashing.
Yeah.
In terms of games I've been playing, I just blew through, or I didn't blow through. I played Metroid Fusion a couple times. First time I did normal. Second time I tried to go for the 100% under 2 hour run. Completely botched that one up. And then I played a little bit of Super Metroid after that. You know, it's a good stress reliever. Mm-hmm. Until I went back and forth between Super Metroid and Metroid Fusion, and I realized that there are a couple differences in the controls, but not enough for me to differentiate between them. So I end up doing stupid things like holding R and shooting super missiles when I should be shooting something else.
Nice. Yeah, well, I've been playing Metroid Fusion like Matt. So I'll write up a review for that soon. This is on the Wii U Virtual Console. I also have it on the 3DS Virtual Console, but... I also have the original Game Boy Advance copy. It's packed away since we're got things packed, but great game. Love Metroid Fusion. I thought it was interesting. Have you guys played around with some of the options with the Game Boy Advance VC games on the Wii U? You can enable smoothing. Have you checked that out?
Yep, I totally did. I have a large TV, so the smoothing kind of really made it.
I dropped the ball on that.
Yeah, there's two options. You can do smoothing, or no smoothing. Just have the pixels. But Then there's also a full screen option and then pixel perfect option. So I've been playing with full screen and non-smoothing, and it's been pretty good, but I need to tweak it and check out the Pixel Perfect, maybe with smoothing enabled, see how that goes. But it's pretty slick. I like some of the options they have with it.
I'll have to check that out. I didn't even know those options were available.
Yeah. Oh, man, I regret posting my review. I didn't even not that I'd be able to fit it in anyway because I was already, you know, pretty full, but...
Yeah. No, I was playing around in the settings option in there, and I don't know if it's on all of them, but I assume it's on all the new GBA ones. But anyway,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
But I was just gonna say I love being able to flip through the manuals.
Yes,
that's just really, that's really slick, and it's the sort of thing that now that I've seen it, it's like, man, why didn't they? You know, why haven't they been doing this all along? Just seeing all the like original artwork and stuff like that.
I love that it's the original artwork, you know, because they could have easily, you know, just done like, do you remember the manuals on the Wii or even the original digital manuals on the Wii U? You know, they're kind of like all styled the same and they just have like different headers and things like that. There's not much soul to them, you know. But it's really cool seeing like the whole Metroid Fusion art book, you know, the manual and everything, and anyway, it's good stuff. What else have I been playing? I did played some Wii Party U recently. Played some this weekend with some family, and
nice.
It's a good party game. And
there's still a few games I haven't been able to play on that, just because we've never had enough of a group for some of them, but.
Yeah, I know. We're still going through some of them. I really like the Island one, the Gamepad Island. It's basically the board game one. It's one of the board game ones. But that one is really cool.
That's the one where you, like, trace on the doors to...
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've got a lot of variety to, like, rolling the dice and stuff like that. So, yeah. That's what I've been playing.
Nice. All right, well... that does it for this week's KoopaCast. I want to thank everybody for joining me, both readers and viewers and staff members alike. We do answer questions here online, just like we did with our bosses about Mai Tai. It was a very pressing question, of course. If you have pressing questions, there's several ways you can get in contact with us. While we're off the air, you can contact us through our podcast at purenintendo.com. You can also follow our Twitter accounts. Those are also on our websites. You know, we all like any new Twitter followers, so if you have a question you want to ask us, you know, you can definitely do that through our Twitter. If you want to wait till we're online, we have a Q&A app at Google+. We always link everything to our page, our purenintendo.com, when we post it up, our KoopaCast. You can also leave an answer in the comments. We'll take a look at it. We'll praise it, you know, all sorts of things. Well, so without further ado, this is the end of the KoopaCast, number 48. Please join us in 2 weeks. We'll come back for more KoopaCast awesomeness. So thank you, everybody. We'll see you later.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.